All right, here we go. It's Gloucestercast 225, and the exit music goes out. I don't have my headphones on, so I'm winging this. I don't know where we came in with the background music, but
where's your headphones?
I don't have them because I'm a jerk. Anyway, we have a full house. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Lucky 7 today. It's gorgeous. The weather has finally broke. We're here with Andrew Brusso from Black Earth Compost.
Brusso.
I know I was going to fuck it up. But anyway, Jess Biker is here.
Good morning.
Melissa Cox is here.
Good morning.
Paul Morrison is here.
Howdy.
Bridget Matthews is here.
Good morning.
And my co-host, Kim Smith, is here.
Good morning.
It's yet to fail me. Sunday mornings. We have a lot of topics. We're going to lead off with Andrew in Black Earth Compost, which, Kim, conservatively speaking, how long have we been trying to get him on the podcast? We've been talking about it. We had a false start.
Right. We've been talking about it for really a long time. Since last year, probably.
Since last year. Because we love the concept. But we had a false start, didn't we?
Oh, this morning.
When we thought we were inviting the other guy, we thought it was Black Earth Compost, but he was really just some guy running a summer camp. I don't know how I got that fucked up.
Oh, wait, Eric Majors.
Yeah, Eric Majors from Manchester. He comes in, I'm like, ready to talk about soil and compost, how I'm going to fix up my place. And
Eric is a recycling superhero.
Yes.
Well, there you go. That's wonderful to know.
Local superhero.
Okay.
Local superhero.
Nice to know that about Eric. He's such a nice guy.
No, he was great.
It was great to meet him.
He was great to meet him, but we...
Another Ward 2 resident, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, he's a Gloucester guy?
Yeah.
I thought he was from Manchester for some reason.
He works in Manchester.
He taught there. Cape Ann.
Yeah, okay. Cape Ann guy. But he lives in Gloucester. He's a Ward 2 guy, dealing with the seagulls.
Hey, we have breed nothing but the best in Ward 2, okay?
I'm a huge fan. When I first got my divorce, I dreamt about living on Middle Street. I had it in my head I wanted to live in.
Don't go there right now. They're repaving.
Right in downtown.
But so we're going to get back to Black Earth Compost, but a little sidetrack. But so I've there's two places I've always wanted to live. And someone is just in front of me all the time. Jen Cullen is just in front of me. Jen Cullen moved to this little place on Niles Beach that I was looking at to rent. And she ended up renting that place, lived there for 2 years. And then all of a sudden, she says, I'm going to go to, she moved. She goes, I've always dreamt of this, moving to downtown. She's living on the corner of Main and Center Street in the top floor.
Great place.
Gorgeous views. So she moves in, and then she said all she's been doing on Facebook is complaining about the seagulls squawking at
me. Yeah. I feel bad for her. We have not really a dehumidifier, not really a noise machine, but something that makes my white noise it's just a... That's what we use it for.
It's not official white.
It's like
noise,
an air purifier. But we don't care if it air purifies. It just makes enough noise where we can sleep.
White noise, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's awesome.
She says she's doing the white noise machine, the air conditioner, earplugs, and she still says she's having a hard time.
Did you know we didn't even have seagulls here year round until the 1930s? Isn't that amazing?
Is that true?
Yes.
Did they migrate?
No, they started eating garbage from landfills, and there was enough for them to eat year-round, and as the climate's changed and gotten a little bit warmer. But prior to that, there were no nesting records of great black-back gulls or herring gulls prior to the 1930s.
Very interesting.
Yep, so just...
Well, right now, I think right now they're doing the baby thing right now. They're nesting
right
now.
Nesting, yeah.
Like if you're so Melissa, so I went to I have a bill that needs to be paid at City Hall, so I went there at 2:30 Friday.
How'd that work out for you?
Didn't work out so well.
No, you knew to Gloucester.
I am an idiot once again. Joey proves how dumb. So I go, there's crickets in there. They close at 12:30 on Fridays.
Yeah.
It's a nice racket.
Just some advice.
It's only been the last 25 years.
Right. On Thursday, they are open until 6:30.
Oh,
so
Day late, dollar short.
Feel free to stop by
anytime. Day late, dollar short.
Yeah.
I never go to see it. I really don't have any reasons. Yeah. So just
did you pay
randomly.
The meter? We don't really care as long as you paid the meter.
I paid the meter. I'm good. It's all good. Yeah, that would be the real kick in the nuts. If I got the ticket on top of it, would really be the kick in the nuts.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's back to Black Earth Compost. Eric, Andrew, what? How did Black Earth Compost? Well, tell us what it is, and then tell us how you got started.
Okay, so it started about 7 years ago. My partner Connor Miller, he started it as a pickup service. He had a truck. He had a shovel. He would shovel out the barrels into the back of the truck.
He'd pick up what?
Food scraps from restaurants in town, like Gloucester House, the brewery.
And were these places, were they paying to get rid of their compost
yes.
before?
Okay. Yep. Yep. And so.
And now, did he pay to take it, or did he do this as a service to take it away for free, so they wouldn't have to pay for it originally?
Oh, no. So originally it went in the trash. And so he came and wanted to provide this service, and so the restaurants pay for it. So they're kind of funding the trucking. Because mm-hmm. in essence, our business is a trucking business. We have trucks out every day, they go to pick up, and then they get rid of it. So we're a little different because we get rid of it, the food scraps, by bringing it to our own compost site. Most other truckers who do in this business, they bring it to someone else's. So we're a collection and compost business together. And so I came on a year or two after Connor started to run the compost side. So
he's doing the trucking side, the
yep.
collecting side, and you're doing the soil side, or the compost side.
Yeah, the compost magic side.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a nice setup. In that way, like from a business sense, he handles that, I handle this.
Mm.
So
do you have any kind of degree in soil or stuff? What qualified you to, why did you want to jump into this?
Because I was interested.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to UMass Amherst for earth systems. I had a great teacher there. I was an oceanographer. After that, I went down Antarctica, crossed the Atlantic a couple times, studying the ocean. Then I came back to land. I was in Seattle in grad school studying organic waste management. And I've been talking to Connor a lot. And one day I called Connor up. I told him I'm dropping out, I'm driving back, and I'm going to start the compost side.
Wow.
Yep.
It was just destiny.
Yeah, well, I've been following it for at least 15 years now. Just organic waste management and recycling. So, like, what are we actually recycling when we say we're recycling food scraps? You know, we're recycling the phosphorus, the nitrogen, the potassium, the calcium, all these nutrients that are contained within the food scraps. And we're recycling them back to make new food instead of going into the landfill being disposed of. But I think the interesting part of the story is where did those nutrients first come from? You know, because farmers apply them onto their farm fields, but where did they come from? They came from rock. So we mined them out of rock all over the globe with heavy equipment, you know, that's burning thousands of gallons of diesel an hour, you know, and then all the other impacts from mining. So you're going to extreme lengths to get these nutrients. You're applying them on a farm field, you're growing food, you're eating that food, and then you're throwing that away. And those nutrients are lost, and we gotta go mine new nutrients, you know, because we still need to apply to the farm fields. So recycling with composting, we're bringing those nutrients back around, and we're using those nutrients a second time, a third time. So that makes that original mining event twice as effective, three times as effective.
Wow.
And it will just keep going, right? From the
in theory, if it was a perfect recycling system, but there's always loss. You know, there's loss at every step.
So there has to be some, you're saying there has to be some mining.
Mining. But if we can recycle it more, then we can make that mining more, like, effective. Make the whole global system more efficient. instead of right now, it's real leaky.
Mm.
Like nutrients are just leaking out into the ocean, the soil, the rivers, and we got to get new stuff.
Wasted.
Yeah.
It's just wasted.
Yeah.
Not being put to use before it's leaking.
Yeah.
So Connor gets the stuff, he brings it to you, you turn it into, is it
compost?
Compost. Now, define compost. Is it soil and nutrients, or?
It's not soil. Compost
is... Oh, it's different.
Yeah. It's a product. It's a soil amendment. So soil is mostly tiny rocks, tiny minerals all broken up. Like loam is a soil. And there's the organic matter content is like 10%, 5% for a pretty good soil. Whereas compost is, it's 100% organic matter. So.
Wow.
So
if you're going to grow stuff, this is like super food, right?
Well.
Super environment.
A soil should have mineral matter. So like a soil is loam. And compost is something that you add to it to, like, add nutrients. And organic matter is an important component of soil. It's a component of soil.
Go ahead.
So, say you have soil. How much would you recommend is a good ratio of, you know, if you have decent soil? I'm not talking about, like, junky soil. But say you have decent soil. What's the good ratio of soil to compost?
25% compost, 75%.
Decent soil.
If for like a garden bed,
right?
You know, but if you're making a new lawn, maybe you want to do like 10 to 20% compost, and the rest would be like your native soil.
So how does it? So people come to you to buy this, and how does it come in bags, or how does the compost get delivered? Like, what do you do with it? So now you got it at your site.
Yeah.
How do we get it?
Uh-huh. So you can buy it in bags at garden centers all
Wolf
around.
Wolf Hill has it. Everybody has it.
Yeah,
now.
Building Center,
yeah.
Wolf Hill,
yeah.
They have it.
Just look for the big green bags,
yeah.
Green, black earth compost, and black lettering right there.
Cedar Rock Gardens.
Yeah, we had them on last time, right?
Yeah.
They have it.
Yeah. And we also deliver it by the truckload.
Oh, really? Do you have a set price per truckload?
It's $75 a yard, and if you get a whole truckload, it's $650.
$650.
Yeah,
and they'll go like they went. They have been helping me in my gardens in Andover at Phillips Academy. They came with a big truckload last year.
So you dump it out in a big pile, and then the people spread it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah.
Our gardens have never looked beautiful since we started working with Andover.
More beautiful.
More beautiful.
More. Okay. What did I say?
They've never looked beautiful.
Oh. I meant to say more beautiful.
Listen, I make mistakes all day long.
They have never looked more beautiful. And I'm 100% not just saying that because Andrew's here. The Black Earth Compost so improved our soil at Phillips Andover. I don't know what they were getting before.
Kim, you've been to my house.
Mm-hmm.
What would improve... How would I use his product?
Well, first of all, your house, you just moved there. So, like I said before...
Don't do anything for the first year.
Don't do anything.
Right.
Wait and see everything that comes up. Look, get a sense of how you want to use the property, and just hold off. Mm-hmm. Once you've established where your beds are going to be, I would, you know, make it simple for yourself. Get bags of Andrew's compost, and I would just spread it around on the upper surface of the soil. And then, I don't know, what would you do? Because I would say then as it rains, it would just go into the soil, it would act like a compost tea, and it would help improve the soil. That's
so wherever I have flowers or something,
yes,
like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if possible, work it into the soil. Like,
how
kind of turn it a little
bit.
With one of those...
Pitchforky things?
How much would you say?
You can go up to 50-50 with compost and soil. You can plant plants directly in 100% compost. It does work.
Yeah.
He has a beautiful perennial established garden already.
So
yeah.
That's the thing. If it's perennial, you can't really work it in as much. So I like to say put it down and then Even better is put mulch on top of it, because then it stays moist through the season, and it releases its nutrients when it's moist. If you put it on top, it's dry from the sun, and it will release some, and over time, over the years, it'll get worked in and released. But if you want it all that
high air, impact, put it underneath the mulch.
Yep.
There you go.
A good stiff raking over the top, like to
yep.
break stuff
kind of
up
break
a
it up first.
Just
scratch it in.
Scratch
yeah.
it in.
That's amazing. So you also been doing programs. I see oftentimes. So what? It just did. It just happen that the program you've been doing with Backyard Growers, because I see you kind of work with them on some kind of initiatives, right?
Yeah. I'm good friends with a couple of them. There's a lot of them over there. You know, they've expanded. And
every time there's a grant, you see their name is involved.
Yeah,
they're doing really good stuff.
They're great.
Yeah,
Laura Laponica.
Has so much respect.
Did I say it right? Laponica?
That sounded good.
La Pianca.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you do with them?
We just did a talk about how to use your backyard compost pile to either be effective to get rid of your garbage so that you don't need a pickup service, or to get rid of your like green weeds and stuff like that from your garden. Just like trying to help people with their compost piles, because like you said, yours was just leaves and doesn't do anything.
No, it's just hanging out. So I had this big heart on last, so we were gonna do this. You know, we had leaves,
right.
And I didn't want to pay to have the leaves lugged away. I'm like, I got on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, I found out how to build a compost pile.
Yeah.
I get the 4 heavy duty, you know, iron stakes, and I put the mesh, the green mesh around it, and I have a little gate there that I can open it up, and I just started stuffing all the leaves in there.
Right.
So the leaves are full to the top of the thing.
But Andrew will tell you how.
That was the point. That was where I was going with it, Kevin, until I was so rudely interrupted.
Joey, your pile and my pile need to get together because mine's super gooey.
You need more leaves.
Yeah.
Oh, you can come. You're welcome to come over and get my leaves. So tell me what I did wrong and how I can make this better or work for me.
Okay, so what you did good was you saved your leaves. Like, leaves are your number one resource. You know,
Kim says this all the time,
yeah.
by the way. She says, don't do away with your leaves. Don't you say that?
Keep them. The trees put them there for a reason, you know, and then we rake them up and send them off. Like, we should be, in the fall, you can go out and collect leaves. People put them in bags on their sidewalk. You can go and get those, bring them to your property, and you got more leaves.
What would you do with them? Would you just leave them scattered around your thing, around your property?
I think they're a great mulch to put down around the trees, because the trees put them there for a reason.
Okay.
You know.
I leave them down in my perennial beds also.
Yes.
But on the lawn, you shouldn't leave them on the lawn, should you?
No. We don't leave them
no.
on the lawn.
Okay.
There's this like fundamental battle between grass and trees, and so you know trees put leaves down to cover the grass, because like the grass is fighting for root space.
Yeah.
You know, so there's this fundamental battle. If you got grass right up to your base of your trees, you know that tree might be losing.
Yeah, your trees don't like that.
Oh, is that why they put buds around the trees a lot of times?
Mm-hmm. It should look like a forest under your trees. You know, if it looks like grass,
that's not natural. Let's get back to what I'm supposed to be doing with my pile of leaves that
right.
I haven't done anything with.
Okay, so the leaves, that's going to be the body of your new compost, okay? And what you need, the two ingredients are moisture and nutrients. And nutrients come in the quote-unquote greens, which are your grass or your food scraps or fish, lobsters.
Grass will work?
Grass clippings.
It's green. Green grass.
Grass clippings.
Okay.
So, you want to put all those into the middle of your pile of leaves, not on top. Because if you put it on top, it's going to dry and dry things aren't going to do anything. You want to put it in the middle of that pile of leaves and make sure it's moist in there, and then that's it.
What do you mean, that's it? That's it?
It will start to compost.
It'll start to compost.
It'll start to rot.
I mean,
compost.
In the real world, you're supposed to, I think, layer leaf junk.
No. That's the layered method. I like this other method. I call it the bread oven, where you kind of are always
just
putting your green stuff into the core. You're, like, opening up the leaf pile to you're opening up a door to get to that core of the pile.
Like a woman sitting in front of me, spreading her legs open. No, if you see his hands, the way he's using his hands, he's like getting in there. I'm sorry, go ahead. That was so silly. Go ahead.
So you're going for the core.
Because he's all excited about it the way I would be excited if, you know what I mean? Like, because he's passionate about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's talking about a Weber grill or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's like your Weber grill.
Yeah.
All right? You're trying to put
The meat.
The stuff.
You want to put the meat.
Yeah, the meat.
Right in the oven. You want to put the meat in the oven.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that oven.
I have a completely different visual now. Thank you, Joey.
Wait. I'm trying to pull this together. You're putting the meat in the middle of the oven, which happens to be at the bottom of the pile. And in there, it's staying moist and staying warm because the outside of the pile, all those leaves, is insulating. And it's holding in the heat and it's holding in the moisture. And that's all you need.
That's what we're looking for.
So once you put
heat
the meat
and moist.
In, you close that door, you let it sit for a week, and then you open it up again next week, you put more in.
I'm all
close
about
it.
Up. Put more in. Just keep putting more in. Moisture and heat.
Right up your alley.
I'm just an excellent.
He's a pro. That's why we have the pros come in.
Yes.
We had Cedar Rock Garden people passionate about that. Now we got Andrew here talking about composting and making our lives better.
Yeah, really.
But you know what? Before it sounded so complicated that you had to do all this layering. You can just put half of your stuff in, and then dump all your things in. The proteins.
And you have your gate. So you made your nice little gate. Just open your gate, push the leaves aside, and put it in. So.
Put it in. There you go. That's good. Put it in.
So yeah. How long does it theoretically need to sit and percolate before you'd be able to use it in the garden?
So you should stop adding like food, like meat and like food and stuff if you're adding meat. So if you're doing that, you should stop adding that stuff and like let it sit like over the winter or like for a couple months. And during that time, maybe open it up and churn it twice.
That's it.
And so that's why it's good to have two piles. So one is like quote unquote curing, getting ready for use. And your other pile is your active one that you're putting your food scraps in.
And then can you just take it from the pile and put it on your garden?
Yeah, so you take it from the core of that pile. You open that door up and you take the stuff out. And that's the good stuff. The outside of your pile, it's just going to look like leaves, as
right.
It should.
But the core, but then when you take the stuff out of the middle, it'll drop. Then the top of that pile can become your core.
Exactly.
You can add your stuff, and then you can put the other stuff on top of that.
Exactly.
He gets it.
Great job.
Yeah, you're always adding leaves on top, and that's why you need a lot.
There you go. I got a lot. So
yeah.
There you go.
Or you can steal your neighbors, apparently.
Yes.
Melissa's got her hand raised.
I'm going to be Debbie Downer here because we had a problem with the compost pile in Ward 2. And just please ask that you be completely respectful of your neighbors because compost piles may attract rats. So if you see that happening, please do something so your neighbors don't have to call.
Do you have any ideas about that, Andrew?
Well, I completely agree with her. Like, when I'm talking about putting meat and lobsters and stuff in there, I'm saying it's possible, and the compost pile will break it down because it's organic matter, but you really gotta be cognizant of animal strikes on your pile. You know, if that's happening, you gotta stop putting that kind of stuff in there for at least a month or two.
You have to stop putting the meat in.
Yeah, and I don't really recommend putting meat into a backyard pile unless you have it, like, locked down tight.
Because it's going to attract.
So grass clippings are ideal in that, then?
Grass clippings.
They're okay.
Food scraps.
Veggie. scraps.
Yes.
Oh, like
veggie
lettuce.
Scraps. Yep. Because they're not as attractive.
All the peelings. Well, do you think the rodents and such don't care that much about peelings?
I believe so. But, like, this is the important thing is observation and watching your pile and seeing what's going on. If you're having a problem, like the first time you see an animal strike, you gotta
back off.
Yeah,
address.
You gotta back off.
Figure out what they are going there for.
Yep.
And
put
what would, I mean, would you notice them like a hole because they were digging in to get stuff? Is
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe with the coffee grinds and stuff like that.
Right.
Not attractive. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't like that.
I got
a
ton of coffee grinds.
Right. Coffee grinds, eggshells.
Can you throw coffee grinds on top or is that not good?
Put them inside.
I'll put them inside, right, because
on
top they're going to dry out. Right, right. The whole idea is moist.
Yeah.
Hot and moist.
In the middle.
I can remember that.
Just like a Weber grill.
That's right, where you put your meat.
You've explained it in terms Joey can understand. And remember, but that's...
I think we've...
you know how you rotate your coals?
Yes, that's right. So this is fantastic.
Yeah.
The one other topic we're going to hit on quickly is there are cities that... your partner actually goes around the truck and what are we calling it? Curbside collection of food scraps.
Yes.
And so, what are some of the cities that are doing this right now and explain how it works?
Okay, so there's been some city-sponsored collection programs in order to like get like a critical mass of people so we can provide the service at a good price. So that's Newburyport, Beverly, Salem, and the town of Manchester actually does it citywide.
Is Hamilton or not? Or is that a different
Hamilton
company?
Hamilton does it as well, but it's picked up from a different company.
Okay, gotcha.
but we collect from residents from any town in this area. It doesn't have, like, it's great that those cities are doing it, but we collect from residents all in Gloucester, Rockport, Essex, all the way up to Newburyport.
How would those residents get involved in the program? Do they have to have a certain kind of container?
We advise you on what kind of container to get, or
so
maybe you have.
Can we kind of sign up for the program with you guys?
Yep.
Right. We call you up and we say, Andrew, we'd like you to come pick up our food scraps every week. And what do we do? How do we arrange that? Okay.
You call us up.
Okay.
And we tell you what to do.
What day you come on. And
yep, yeah. And we come every week, and there's a charge for us to come pick it up because we're a trucking business. We drive trucks. And
so do you guys, do you advise people? Because I remember when we did it in Hamilton, they had these like light green, they're like garbage bags.
Compostable
bags, so they're biodegradable or whatever, right? And do you advise people to use that or tell them where they can get that? Is that part of, would that work with your system, the
yes,
way you guys work?
Yes, they can use those. They can also use paper bags. It's all, they can use whatever they want.
See, I like the plastic, the compostable ones, because it's a barrier, so it doesn't like...
To get
yes.
smelly
to,
after
yeah,
a week.
You don't get
yeah.
I don't like
yeah.
smelly stuff.
Yeah.
Again, it's also, it's a moisture problem, again. Like if your bin is getting nasty, your compost bin's getting nasty because it's too wet in there. Like, that's a problem, and so that's why people use the bags. But you could also be throwing sawdust or wood shavings in there, or drying out your food scraps before. So it's all a moisture problem.
Huh. Wood shavings.
Wood
yep.
shavings.
And what was the other thing?
Sawdust.
Yeah.
I don't know, leaves if you want.
Good to know.
Yeah.
There you go. See, we're getting all these pro tips right here. Composting
yep.
pro tips. What we're all about.
Yeah, that was really awesome.
What's great between the composting and the recycling, you have very little trash to put out.
Right.
Right.
We were saying that earlier.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. That's the
that's
idea.
It's supposed to work, Joey.
No, that's good. No, it's good. No, it's so true, though. Like, you know, there's... It's amazing when you start recycling. I mean, everybody now, I'm not saying everybody, but most people now
it's so awesome.
Are aware of the benefits of
so
not having to pay for trash because you're recycling it. You
yeah,
know?
And that's a big reason the cities, like cities all over are pushing it, because they pay for every ton of trash that we produce. And that the money that goes towards those purple bags, that goes towards paying the trash company to go dump it in a hole in the ground.
Right, which is ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I love it. Thank you for coming. And we're going to link to your site, to the Facebook page, And people, if you're interested in getting this service, actually, you can buy the compost at any of the hardware stores locally or Cedar Rock Gardens.
And Wolf Hill.
And Wolf Hill.
Yeah.
And you can get on board with the program collection by contacting you guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Melissa Cox, you are here, and Paul Morrison is here.
And here.
What?
Here.
Oh, were you in the thing too?
Yeah.
She got a medal.
And Jessica.
You got a medal?
You weren't in it. I didn't raise.
What did you win?
I won my class.
What was your class?
SS20. So it's the classes go by book style, and I was the only female in my class.
You didn't have to share that part.
That is awesome.
So I was
honest.
In my class.
Very honest of you.
So I literally won and lost in my class.
That is tremendous. I love it.
Congratulations.
Was this the F6 riverboat race? What was this particular?
Yes. F6 river race.
Well, it says Cape Ann Rowing Club. Dumbass. There, Essex River Race.
Please don't moon him.
Yeah, very good. This whole race was shrouded in controversy. There was pirate boardings, and Melissa Cox. And did you guys have a friendly bet between you and Paul Morrison?
I was hoping to kick his ass, but apparently that didn't work.
So what kind of you were both
she
in kayaks?
My ass.
Were you both in kayaks?
Yes.
And he beat you? This old man beat you?
Well, he had a fiberglass kayak, and he gave her his plastic kayak.
Which is fine. I mean,
it's definitely slower, though.
Did our friend Donna out of Zoom?
No.
Did Donna participate? No?
No.
She company.
Hey, there was no way I was going to let Melissa beat me, so yes, I gave her a 75-pound log.
What a gentleman.
And I had a 30-pound carbon fiber.
What a gentleman.
So,
and my paddle.
On the way out, so we started at the same time, M through Z, and then all the ladies, the men M through Z, and all the ladies left at the same time. And so I passed him on the way out.
Off the line, I beat her, and then 5 minutes later, la la la, Melissa's just moving by me. Like,
now, were you? Was this something mentally like I just want to beat him?
Not necessarily. I mean, I wanted to do well. This was my first year doing it.
Okay.
Little wanted to beat Paul. We're in a different class, so it wasn't, you know.
But you were going past him. What was going through your mind when you passed him the first time?
Hell yeah, I just passed him.
My paddle is fucking broken or something.
I told her I just needed to finish.
Yeah.
To win, I just needed to finish. And she's like, I'm all about the time. I'm super competitive.
Yeah. I'm not sure what part of me you don't understand is like wicked competitive.
So then when did it all fall apart for you?
So on the way out, the tide's on the way out, but we had a wind. Do you have any idea what the speed of the wind was?
I was told 12 knots.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
So the wind is blowing in our face.
Yeah.
And but the tide's going out. So I'm going on the back side of the island, and the current is so strong pulling out.
Yeah.
And it's like I have never felt anything like that before. And
pulling out. No, I mean for the current.
And I am paddling my ass off. And I'm like, what is happening? I'm not going anywhere. And then my boat starts rocking, and there's this kayak behind me, and he's holding on to the back of my boat.
No, you were not.
It wasn't me.
wasn't Paul.
Sabotage.
Right, I'm pretty sure he paid.
Pirates, yeah.
Yeah, with your what?
Somali. So the look on your sleeve. Somali pirates.
So I'm asking the guy, I'm like, what are you doing? You're going to tip me over. You have got to let me go. And he goes, the current's too strong. I'm afraid. And I'm like, you can't
you take both of us down.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, there's a chase boat. They will help you. And then another guy comes up beside us, and he's asking us if we're okay. And I'm like, I'd be fine if he would let go of me.
The Somali pirate.
Yes. And I cannot turn around because I will flip my boat.
I paid the dude to flip her.
He failed you. That's when you're supposed to have the flare in the boat, and you take put the flare right in his face.
What part of plastic kayak did you not understand that I was in? My luck, I'd sink my own boat.
And I heard that Paul came by them and thought they were just having this kind of menage a trois on the river and didn't even stop to pay
attention. This whole podcast is going right to the dogs.
Yeah. So
it looks like they're helping you, Melissa. See ya. Bye.
And he's gone. And yep. I'm like, I'm yelling at him.
He took the opportunity. He was an opportunist.
I'm yelling at him saying, I need a longer paddle. Because I couldn't reach the guy to beat him off.
And if you turned around, you were going to be flipped over.
Right.
Oh, no.
And then, so...
So how did you get rid of him?
So the other guy, he finally convinced the guy to let go. And so...
Wow.
Motherfucker, pass me.
That guy that... No way! Son
what?
Of a...
The afraid guy did?
Yeah.
Oh, so rotten. So rotten. You know, this is like a Lifetime miniseries right here.
When we got situated
Hallmark Channel.
And he let go, he went on the inside of the island, which had a less current. But I was, because I was on the outside of him when we were stuck together, I went out with the current more. And I could not get back in closer to the island where the current was less. And so I wasted so much energy and time that on the way back. And
so
I'm,
did you
I'm
see looking, him on the beach when you hit the shore?
I have no idea what he looks like. I couldn't even tell you.
And it's so not the spirit of the race. This is, you know, it's run by volunteers. It's a fun race. They tell everyone, you know, it's not about the competition. If somebody's in trouble, help them. And this is the exact opposite.
Well, the poor guy thought he was going to Spain because... You know, the open ocean is right around the corner.
Well, I guarantee you, they don't have these races without the boats to check in on people.
Well, the,
to, that are gonna,
the chase boat was
right,
on
the chase
back,
boats.
The harbor police were great. They
yeah,
were so
which
great.
Were ahead of me. Yeah.
This is so
I may have asked to borrow the handcuffs at some point. But I still finished the race in an hour and a half, which is completely respectful.
Absolutely.
I did not beat Paul, which was completely unrespectful.
We're only behind Paul for like... By like 7 minutes.
Yeah, so we have no idea what
well,
our
listen,
official
this
time
is a guy that has done the around the Cape race
yeah,
in a carbon fiber thing, in a carbon fiber kayak that weighs a third of yours.
Well, I've done it in this one also.
Yeah, he did it in this one. I was using his old one.
And he
knew about the currents. He probably used that to his advantage.
He like, paid, the know,
paid the pirate. Paid the pirate. The deck was stacked against you.
I'm surprised that I didn't have like little pinholes in my kayak, except for the fact that maybe he wants
Joey,
to reuse it later.
Pumping the thing out.
Joey is correct that I do know the characteristics of the boat that I gave you, and that I knew what was going to happen that day, that there was going to be a 15-knot wind against the tide going back.
But you shared
and
that
I knew
me.
That you were going to be screwed because that boat.
So heavy.
It is no it weathercocks, which I know Joey would love.
What did
that.
You just call me?
when you're going into the current, but you've got a tailwind, that boat really wants to weathercock and turn sideways. Your stern is going.
Oh, I noticed my right shoulder, like it's completely tight. My left is fine.
Yeah. It's like paddling a sea cow.
And I knew that, so I knew I was going to win eventually.
What a bastard.
I
what
swear
a rotten bastard.
I am going to practice every chance I can get with that current. Next year, you're going down. There's no way.
What boat are you going to use next year?
Same one.
So, oh, I love it. I love it.
All things
so,
equal.
So there's this guy. So,
and I swear to God, I am going to rub Vaseline all over my boat. No one was going to touch my boat.
Does that help?
That's
this is a throwdown, right?
It just
here,
keeps
right
going,
here.
Gets worse and worse. Yeah.
I'm trying to restrain.
My back end is going to have.
That's a good use, a good place for it in the back end. Yes.
In reality, I only do this Essex River race because I get a cool T-shirt, and it's
most
and it's,
most of these things. That's all about people enter because they want the cool T-shirt. And I always say the Magnolia Road Race. J.D. McCaquarin and Randy O'Neill, they ran it for years. And every year when they came in, I'm like, you know, what are the T-shirts like? And they're like, oh, we're doing cotton T-shirt. I'm like, listen, you want your the
yeah.
to go double, you know, for the following year? You put a nice dry fit t-shirt with a cool logo on it, people like will pay just to get the t-shirt.
The Blackburn Challenge on their 25th anniversary did a dry fit, a black one, and that was the race that I got Ed Collier to do. And the two of us got that the dry fit t-shirt. Yeah. If he would get his butt back up here in Gloucester, he wears that at least once a week just to show off.
It's cool.
And knowing that they switched now for the first time, they went with Shirts Illustrated. Also for the Blackburn Challenge.
My girl, awesome. Julie Lopes and Henry Lopes.
Those guys are great.
Fantastic.
I keep going back to the fact that Ed did Blackburn. Like, I could totally do Blackburn. But
Ed Collard, psychotic smoker, chain smoker.
Yeah.
Never did a kayak. He did. He's like, he trained how many times? Four times did you guys train?
He had a wonderful teacher.
Not answering the question.
Those were high quality.
How many lessons did you give him?
Four,
like couple hour lessons or whatever it was, right?
He didn't smoke while he was battling.
He did the black. I mean, that is very impressive. Like for
right.
him.
Right. So like I'm going. You're such a pussy. Do it. But seriously, I was tired yesterday.
Well,
I wasn't exhausted.
Well, but you should be. You should be pushing yourself to a point.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. After the race, and I drive back and I eat my bagel and bacon that was up on my dash, and it was so hot and tasty. But I go home and I take a martini and a nap for the rest of the day. And what does Melissa do? But she goes down to the Gloucester Fire and is.
Big fire yesterday. What? That was on Centennial Ave?
Yeah.
Three houses?
Well, 76 was a complete teardown. 74 is, they can't go in. The other ones on the other side had minimal damage.
Was the other side Lookout Street?
No, not on the other side, but the other side
of the house.
So,
74
and 78?
Yeah.
Wow.
Had some damage, but not. But. 74 is definitely not inhabitable right now. They can go in to get things.
Yeah. Very sad.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Were they all single family?
Yeah. 74 is the family that I worked with most last night, and their daughter is graduating high school, so they had planned. Like, mom walked out of the house with nothing but her daughter's prom dress.
Mm.
So and she was just like.
Devastated.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sit there and watch your house burn.
I can't imagine.
But it wasn't a total loss, so that's good. There might be some foundation issues or something, but what we want to focus on now is making sure her daughter has a good prom and good graduation. So, because they won't likely be able to hold the graduation party at the house, what we want to do is try to make sure that we have a venue for them and food and stuff, so if anybody wants to help out, we don't have much in the way of details yet, but...
Are you going to do a online kind of thing?
We'll all set something up.
All right, we'll send the link. Send me the link, and we'll put the link on the blog for them.
There's also a GoFundMe out this morning for the Francis family next door?
I never met them because they were on the other side of the fire trucks, so...
There is a GoFundMe.
Whoever can get me the links to any of these things, I'll include them in the show notes
for those
things. our prayers with those families and our wallets should be with those families.
In my defense, Paul said he went home and took a nap. I went home and I made myself a very nice warm bubble bath with Epsom salt.
Mm.
And I laid in it until it got cold and I got wrinkled. And I ate my... sandwich in the bathtub.
We can take a George's bagel with egg and bacon that George makes at 6:30 in the morning, and if you leave it on the dash of your truck in the hot sun, you can eat it at 2, and it's still hot.
That's nice. That's
nice and gooey.
Yeah.
So yummy.
Yeah.
Our friend Chris DeWolf is cooking there as we speak.
Yeah.
Making me hungry. This is a little off topic, but it does have to relate to this. My friend Mike Codair, his son has, think it's Crohn, like lower intestine problems. I think it's Crohn's disease or something. He's had dealt with this for a long time, and he was in the hospital over the weekend, and he came out and Mike. I was talking to Mike on the phone, and he says, "You know, I've been listening to this podcast. This guy, Jocko Willink, is the guy's name. He was a former SEAL, and he has a motivational podcast." So I was down in Naples, and a friend of mine had recommended, listen to the Tony Robbins podcast. And he goes, you got to read the books. So I'm down in Naples. I was looking for something to read because Kate was reading. And I picked up one of Tony Robbins' self-help books or whatever, you know, the motivational books. I got 10 pages in, and I had to put it down because it's such fucking bullshit. And it's just like, you know, it's just this. He talks in too broad of you know, it takes
case if you went in another direction.
No, it takes forever to get. It's like who's drinking this Kool-Aid? So it was like this $20 book. I left it at the place we were staying. But this guy Jocko Willink is a motivational speaker, but he's pretty hardcore. So this one part, the thing that kind of hooked me was. He's talking about he had a guy that was working for him that would come to him with problems, and every time the guy came to him with a problem, he'd say good. And the guy came to him with another problem. He goes, "Geez, boss, I got a problem. I'm not even gonna say it because I know what you're gonna say." He goes, "What am I gonna say?" He says, "You're gonna say good." And the guy says, "Well, why do you think I'm gonna say good?" He goes, "I don't know. You always say it. It drives me crazy." He goes, "Within problems, there are always opportunities. Whenever you have a problem, it's always how you look at it. Like, you know, you didn't get that job. Good. Focus on, you know, what you can do to make yourself better to get a better job. You know, you didn't get the funding. Look good. Look for a different avenue to, you know." And he goes on and on and on, gives a bunch of different examples. And,
That's interesting.
And
I had an experience like that this way, so that's interesting.
There you go. But you don't even have to listen to all this stuff. But as far as if you're looking for some motivation, say you have something in the back of your mind, an initiative, but you haven't taken that step to make it happen, just go to YouTube and type in Jocko Willink or just Jocko and Good, and you'll see a whole all bunch of, and they're like 2 minutes, okay, little motivational videos. And it makes you like wanna you wanna run through a brick wall after every one of his videos. They're great. So Jocko Willink, I'll put a link to just this one of these, okay. And I think it's pretty good. Anyway, so
Jocko Jocko,
and I'll have the link in there, so you'll be able to check it out. So when it comes down to these, no one wants to have a fire at their house and lose everything. Hopefully. Something good, you know. Maybe the insurance company comes through for them, and they have a better house.
But the Red Cross was there last night too, and you know, it was just.
Have you dealt with the Red Cross before?
I used to be one of the volunteers that worked with the Red Cross to go to fire victims. So yeah, I've worked with them.
Is it amazing work that they do? Or?
Yeah, it's stressful because you're trying to reach out to partner. Like last night, we realized that. One of the residents needed medication, and it was already after 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Trying to reach out to Conley's, even drove over to their house in, you know, Ipswich, and tried getting a hold of them. It's stuff like that, yeah, that they do. Wow. That it's stressful, and especially when you can't get a hold of people, and people are hoping that you can, and it's hard. So
I'll never forget the night that our neighbor's house burned down, and it was just one of the most tragic. I mean, it was so memorable. I'll never forget it. Terrible.
Well, you know, I just want to say this to you because, you know, you're a friend and we don't really talk politics here, but, you know, you were there last night after your race, you're exhausted, you go to the race with these people, but, and you're running for councilor at large this year.
Correct.
But this is what I want to say. I have noticed that there are some people running for council that didn't get elected last year, that have been absent from city functions and everything else for the past 2 years, haven't seen them at anything, and suddenly they're at every ribbon cutting and everything else. Melissa has went it the month after the election. She would have done the same. I am 100% positive. She would have done the same exact thing that she did right just yesterday. It had nothing to do. I am 100% positive. It had nothing to do that she's running for counselor at large. It's just that the person that she
that
is
100%
and it's, and it's 12 months of the year, every year that she's giving back.
Well, and the counselor whose ward it was out of town, and I mean, I was available. I'm not pointing fingers at that particular counselor.
Yeah.
Because obviously this counselor was not one that didn't get elected. But, you know, I would like to think that, you know, when I was in Italy for 3 weeks, that the counselors would have done the same for me. If there was a fire in my ward, that somebody would have shown up and played my part and helped out. So...
But I think that you would have done it even if you weren't running, you just show up.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It, like the 1 hour at a time gang, you know, that isn't just a one, you know, when you're running thing, you do that.
Right.
You've done that from the beginning.
Right.
Anyway, we'll get off of that because we don't, this is not a big politics thing. This
yeah,
is
I,
just a...
I met you at a bike event at O'Malley a couple years ago, and then you gave me a water bottle. And then I also saw you up at the windmills.
Oh yeah.
A little while ago.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The windmill tour.
We climbed the windmill.
Yeah.
How cool was that?
Fabulous.
That was incredible.
I could have just brought a tent or even just a sleeping bag and just stayed up there. It was the views, the peacefulness of it.
Yeah.
Like
your Facebook photo of you standing on the top
so
made
cool.
me want to throw up.
I couldn't have done it.
I wasn't sure. Melissa had done it before, and I hadn't, and I wasn't sure like what it would be like. And you literally are climbing a ladder straight up, 250 feet, and then you climb through the narsal, which is the sort of horizontal.
It's a ladder? It's not a thing that goes around?
Oh, no,
like
it is a ladder.
Oh, no.
Straight up.
Well, I must be pretty tired at the end.
It's like an aluminum ladder.
Yeah.
It's not
very comfortable. Are you roped on or something?
Yes,
yeah,
you are very
tethered.
Similarly attached.
Yeah.
And,
oh, they look like they're bungee jumping from the top.
When you get up to the top, you attach your cables to the side, and it is sort of rubber matted at the top, I guess, you know, so you can stand up. But I had no idea what to expect. And it was really, you could see the whole island. You could see south to Boston, north to Maine.
Wow.
And looking out was great. Looking down, not so much, but out was great.
Yeah. Great opportunity.
Okay.
I hope they do that every like once a year.
Like,
it would be awesome.
Dizzy just thinking about
yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I don't do well with heights.
Especially if you said don't look down.
Yeah. Yeah.
It,
looking
right.
down
was
okay for me. Like, I don't have a problem with heights at all.
Mm.
I have a problem with that first jump. Like, I tried trapeze with my cousin, and I climbed all the way to the top, and I'm hooked in, and I know I'm not going to die, and I just couldn't push myself off. And I've been bungee jumping, I've been skydiving, hang gliding, I've done all those stupid, crazy things, but I guess as you age, your mind goes, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So
I have pushed you to help.
Right?
Just to help.
But I would have rappelled down. I would have absolutely loved to have that opportunity, but they don't do that because of the machine and it's expensive.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
So, yeah.
Dangerous.
Whatever.
No. Hell no.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I want to talk a little bit. Oh, so can we talk about the proposed ordinance to ban single-use plastic bags and polystyrene?
Yes.
Was this a bill that you or ordinance that you had brought to the forefront?
Originally, Greg Verga had brought it forward, and at the time he knew that he wasn't going to be running for counselor again, so he asked me to co-sign with him. And the original bill had some limitations on it that I didn't necessarily like, and my whole thing is, if we're going to do a ban on bags, go big or go home. And so the original bill didn't it had limited ban. And so we withdrew that one and we entered another one that had 100% ban. So all stores, no matter what size or anything. And it stalled out for a little bit. We were getting some help from some high school groups and then it stalled out, and now it's revived. Ainsley Smith is, she's been great with the Clean City Commission. So, and then Eric Majors also getting involved with the high school level. Those two have been amazing to revive this.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing now, the process that we're trying to do now is, we've got the ordinance, they're working on the petition, we're working on education, we're dropping information off at the businesses so they know what to expect should it pass, and you know, education on why the bags are so bad and why the polystyrene is so bad. Polystyrene is 100% non-recyclable, so your to-go containers for food and stuff, I mean, it's just, it goes
trash.
to the dump, and it's
but there are alternatives that are that it's not like this is
like very nice cardboard
that you can't find like an alternative to this.
Right, I mean,
they
there's
are
plastic. There's cardboard. There's tons of different containers, and a good portion of our restaurants are already using.
They've already started to use
that.
Can I ask you a question? Do you know what the difference between a styrofoam cup and a paper cup is in cost?
The cost, pennies. They're pennies.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And we're not the first ones doing this. So I know people are like, oh, I like the styrofoam cup from Dunkin' Donuts. Well, there's other Dunkin' Donuts. Hawaii's completely banned.
California.
So there are other methods. Like, I'm not trying to put anybody out of business. And people are taking it very personal with their attacks on me and why are you doing this to businesses and stuff like that. My role as a city councilor is to bring things forward such as this from citizen groups, and that's how it happened. You know, we were approached, Greg and I were approached from people that really wanted these things banned.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not judge, jury, and executioner. I refuse to be all three. I'll put something forward. I don't take it personal if it loses. It would suck, because my heart's in the right place, and this is something that I feel is the right thing to do. I wish people would just stop using them so we don't have to do a ban. But it's just like the seatbelt law. The reason why there's a law is because we needed to be told what to do.
It's for the good of the community.
Well, speaking
right.
to that, I was talking to an EMT. His daughter plays in the same soccer team that my daughter plays on. He told me that the statistics on death of when he goes to a scene when someone doesn't wear a seatbelt
mm-hmm.
compared to does is it's outrageous.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 99-1.
Yeah.
It's something that
yeah.
outrageous, like that.
And think how those seatbelt laws were fought tooth and nail.
Yeah.
By car manufacturers saying, you know, oh, we can't, this will put us out of business, we can't
yeah.
afford to do
right.
that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, so where is it right now?
We're in the education mode. We're passing out information regarding the ban, the actual process of it, the language of it, and why these two items are so bad for our environment. After that, we are hoping to schedule a green forum at City Hall soon with people that can speak to the ban specifically on these two items. It's a little different than the green forum that we had not too long ago, but specifically to address these two items. And then the Sierra Club has offered to come in and talk to Ordinance and Administration, which is the first step in the city process, is to hear it at committee level, and then it gets pushed over to full city council, where there will be a public hearing on it. Everybody will be able to speak for and against. There's no scheduled date for either ONA or city council at this time, but I will certainly be back to share more about it, because I am very passionate about these two items.
That's
so
wonderful.
And the forum
yeah.
is Thursday night, right? The 25th?
We don't have a date yet.
I just saw a flyer come.
It might be for something else, but it's not for this.
Well, everybody here is very advocating,
right?
And
what happens in the so what would happen in the case of like Stop and Shop and with the plastic bags? What would be the alternative for them?
They could sell the reusable bags, and then
paper.
or you know, we could... I have cases of reusable bags in my basement that I've been... I'll go to events and I will collect them. It's something that I want to be able to hand out if this goes in, as, you know, just come to ONA, grab a bag, you know, leave them at a box at City Hall or something like that. Somewhere where you can donate them.
Just got to get people in the habit of keeping it in their car.
Yeah.
You know, for those quick trips to the supermarket.
Right. And that's what I do, is I have some that I keep in the car. And when I use them for groceries or... I mean, I was just at Second Glance the other day and I brought my bag in.
Mm.
And I didn't... So I didn't use a plastic bag. And then I fold it up as soon as I'm done with it and I put it underneath my keys at the back door.
Ah.
So that way I can...
It's been a hard
challenge for me to get used to putting it back in the car, and then I don't have it. And I'm like, I'll take it without a bag. So
you can still get paper.
There's still paper at the grocery store.
I actually get paper all the time because I use it for my fireplace and recycle my magazines and stuff like that.
I go back and forth.
Use it for your compost bin.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You can use the paper bag to hold your food scraps.
Yeah. Oh, and then toss the whole thing in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it helps contain the moisture.
It breaks
down.
It's all about that moisture. That moisture and the heat.
There's been studies done, and this is something that really bothers me about Gloucester, is that, you know, we're pro-fishing and everything. Everything that we eat that has a belly, we're eating plastic, because those fish, lobsters, clams, all those things that we're eating have bits of plastic in them, and there's tons of research now that are showing that. So,
thank you for coming, Bridget. Bridget's going to take off.
Have a wonderful Sunday.
Thank you. Thanks so much for coming.
We're also protecting the environment in those things, and we're not re-ingesting them. Plastic bags don't decompose. I mean, there's just...
Yeah, we know.
So
I think it's just like the smoking argument. There's no good stuff comes from it.
I have a question. Do you think that whenever, like, the industry gets wind of this kind of thing, they start, you know, posting advertisements against it and things like that, do you expect any kind of industry?
I already have. As soon as Greg and I hit with the first one, we were getting emails, and now that we're reviving this again, we're getting hit with emails from the bag industry telling us that they're not bad, that they can't, the bags themselves can be recycled, but that's if you take them back to the grocery store.
Right.
So there's no process in our recycling stream for plastic bags. Our hauler for Gloucester will not take anything in a plastic bag.
Yeah, I discovered that just recently, because they're leaving the plastic bags behind. I didn't realize that couldn't go. You can't do that.
Yeah,
and it's bad for the recycling stream, because those bags that get wrapped around the equipment
at the
recycling facility.
Yeah, so
downtime costs.
If you're at the Rockport, every single place where you put glasses or cardboard or anything, there's always a sign: do not put a plastic bag in here.
Oh,
yeah. Just screwing up the work.
I'll tell you what's good to... I didn't realize, which is good to know, that Melissa just pointed out, that if you do have plastic bags, bring them back to the grocery store. Because that will... Because I guess if that is a thing, then...
Yes, they will do.
So,
yep.
People... Some of the arguments that I've been getting, too, is that, well, I use them in my waste basket at home and then put it in trash.
Yeah, what do you
say
to that argument?
Well, they can't take them. They're not supposed to take them.
Use a plastic bag in my bathroom trash. It's a plastic bin,
right.
And I dump it in my regular trash.
And then you
you're putting trash in a bag, in a bag, in a bag. So.
Yeah, no, I hear you. No,
And then the dog poop. Well, I use the bags to clean up my dog poop. Well, they don't biodegrade.
Right.
There's no... Your dog poop is going to be petrified before that bag even has a hole in it.
Yeah.
So...
There you go.
It's just...
10,000 years from now, an archaeologist is going to be digging and finding dog shits inside plastic bags.
And it's still
going to
be fresh.
Wondering, what the hell were we doing back then?
Yeah.
We're collecting
have plastic bags 30 years ago. Our age group is now thinking about people in the future. So whereas 30 years ago, those adults didn't care about our future. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're doing, and that's...
There you go. All right, that's all good stuff.
There's one simple little trick that the supermarkets could do for idiots like me, is if they could put a little sign on the outside of their market basket. I'm getting out of my truck, and I look over, and I see a sign that says, "Hey, idiot, are you leaving your recycled bags in your truck? Bring them with you." Because I constantly, I go,
oh, yeah.
I have my stuff, and then, oh, shit, the bags are in. And
I have to be more diligent about using the recycling bags. I have to get in that habit. I have to do it.
If you need some, I will be happy to bring some over to you.
You know something? So we're in the process of moving.
Yeah.
We have a bag full of the recycling bags. They're in the basement somewhere amid the mountain of boxes that have yet to be unpacked.
I have bags and bags that are in the bags.
There you go.
Big bag.
One of my best gifts I ever got was a little thing that you put the bags into.
Bag bag?
What's it called?
A bag bag.
All right. There you go. Kim.
We've busted Melissa's balls enough on that one.
No, I think it was good.
That she did the bag and the bag and the bag.
Oh,
which
yeah.
was good. I like that.
Kim, do you want to go quickly through the main magical migration?
Okay. Well, I just want everybody to be aware of some of the beautiful birds that are on the shore, on our shores right now, and on our wooded glens and uplands.
This is a big migration time.
It's a big, huge migration month. So, you know, we see like a lot of herons come in April, but right now we're seeing so many shorebirds, and some of them are here to mate and breed right here on our shores, and some are headed all the way to the Arctic tundra. So right now we have. Well, I wanted to tell you that we have saw a ruddy turnstone.
It's probably the same one that I saw on the Naples Pier.
Or maybe the same one that I saw last fall going south.
There you go.
And that we have willets and black-bellied plovers and
warblers.
Warblers
going through.
Black and white warblers. I think they're nesting right now. And
are grosbeak migratory? Because we've been seeing grosbeaks.
You know what? Somebody else asked me that, and I forgot to look that up. I'm not sure about that. I'm going to post a whole bunch of pictures of some of the ones that we've been seeing, that you can see right now on our shores. And
we don't have to worry about the losing beach space for the piping plovers, though, because they didn't last long, did they?
I'm not sure. I don't believe they're still there. Yesterday, after those two days of super heat and the beach being very crowded and the dogs and everything else.
Lights out.
I walked.
Are there any in Ipswich right now, do you know?
There's tons in Ipswich. There's some on Wingersheek. There's some on Coffin.
I saw your daughter posted up some pictures on Instagram.
Oh,
where is that?
She's in Long Island.
Oh, they have piping plovers in Long Island.
Yeah, they have them everywhere. And there's, they have them on Rockaway Beach.
New Jersey.
Do you know what Rockaway Beach is like? 10 times busier than Good Harbor.
Oh, wow.
They have piping plovers on Rockaway Beach. So,
there you go.
If they can take care of their piping plovers, we should be taking care of our piping plovers.
There you go. I just want to do a quick rundown on the... the Chamber of Commerce is launching their new member drive. The Chamber under Ken Reel has kind of seen a resurgence. They're doing some really great things. We like Ken.
He and Carrie are tremendous.
He is great.
Yep. And, he is just a positive energy guy. It's nice to see. In the face of all the challenges, he keeps an upbeat, positive attitude.
And what is it? It's like 250 at this time of the year, or something. Relatively recent.
I'm not sure, but they have some big time incentives. They're going to come in and talk to us. But there are some incentives to joining the chamber right now. Karen, you're a member, aren't you?
I have been for many years, but I actually dropped it a couple of years ago, and I'm thinking about rejoining.
Me too, during this membership drive.
Yeah, because I think there's a good deal.
Things have changed. You know.
Things are definitely on the upswing with them, and they're doing some really positive programming. Quick rundown. Passports is doing, Eric put in a 12 tap system. He used to have like three or four, 12, and they're all interesting beers. Nice. I went, and he has the little things like they do at Cape Ann Brewing. You can have a flight of beers, four different samples, and they're decent sized samples for $10. You can discover some beers that you may otherwise not try. Yeah. I tried. It's really great because Eric is kind of a beer kind of guy, so he put some things in front of me that I really enjoyed for $10. Right. That and a burger.
Right,
is
super fun.
Tremendous deal. Yeah. Great deal. Serenity's Happy Belly on, what's the name of that? Is that Duncan?
Yeah.
On Duncan Street is opening, that's opening soon. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a little party there. And who's, do you know who the chef is going to be or who's running it? I don't know
who it is, but
they did another transformation of that place.
Yeah.
I think, but people are excited about
this one. This one, the concept and everything sounds amazing.
What's like, the concept?
Just some good food fast.
Oh, I like that.
So, you know, if you have an hour for lunch and you can just go in, they'll have some stuff pre-made, but they'll also have the ability for you to sit down and eat too, but it's with no wait staff.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, so you go in and you pay, it's like cafeteria style, I guess. Go in and you get your food, and then you can eat at a table or something
that
like that.
Sounds
but
super
yeah,
fast.
They have a liquor license.
They, I believe they do.
I was talking to John Rando yesterday. Do you know that the city has a liquor license right now? And there hasn't been for like 60 years.
Yeah.
The city hasn't actually had possession of a liquor license, and it like. Someone is going to get it for $2,400, where in the like the past 20 years or something, there have been people that have bought existing restaurants for hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the liquor permit and then transfer the liquor permit to in there. And there's one in right now.
Why don't they charge more than $2,400?
We can't. We're limited by the state. So what happened is a restaurant had to surrender it because they lost it. The regulations are very specific with how long you can be out of business, and so it was surrendered. So we are in possession of a liquor license, and we didn't have one for so long. We didn't know what to do with the process, so we had to go back to the state
and see what the process is.
And new board members on the licensing board. Yeah. Huh. So yeah, I mean it's been a learning curve.
Hopefully, it goes to someone needy.
Yeah, well, it's the whole first come, first serve.
Oh, is that
sign
how it
up
works?
Wait list? There's been a wait list for many years.
That's wild.
So, yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I think even there were some people on the wait list that were no longer in business because you know they'd signed up so far.
And
it
expired.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
it's like the Rockport mooring list, which I think
every town's mooring list.
As soon as you have a child born in Rockport, that kid is on the list. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
My kids' grandchildren are on the mooring list.
Yeah.
Do you know if the city of Gloucester's mooring list is available for the public to see? Is it electronically available?
I don't know if it's electronically available. I can find out for you.
I always thought that, because there's always people that say, oh, you know, that they think that there's underhanded stuff, like, you know, favoritism and this, that, and the other thing. And I always thought this very easy way
to know.
Like, you know, keep it, you know, visible in public.
Right.
You know, if it's electronically available, you know, on the website, you know exactly what your spot is. And someone dies, they get off the list and you get bumped up or whatever.
And we've been working on trying to transfer a lot of stuff to the website that's, you know, available electronically. So that we'll put that on the to-do list.
I think that's cool. Yeah.
And what if we just had a lot more moorings here and in Rockport? Then
where would we put them?
Then wouldn't we get more day trippers and
there's certain things.
Money?
The lobster might have something to say about taking their space where they go lobster.
Yeah, there's a difference between day trip moorings and long-term moorings.
Oh, okay.
So,
transient moorings.
I see.
Yeah.
And within the harbor, at least for Gloucester Harbor, I mean, once
it's
those
tight
moorings are full of boats, it's tight in there.
It's very tight.
Yeah.
So, 2-for-1 Thursdays at Pigeon Cove Tavern. You buy one entree, get the other, and you get the one that's free. On Thursday nights, that's a great deal. The studio deck, today, by the time people hear this, But there's still a continuation. On certain nights, they're doing the half off. I went yesterday, half off sushi yesterday.
Oh,
the deck is open, and they're open 7 days a week now at the studio.
We went Friday. We sat on the deck, and we had half off sushi. Beautiful.
Isn't it
beautiful.
Bananas? It's bananas. I can't get enough of that place.
I guess we're going tonight.
There you go, right? So there you go. That's what we got. Hour and 15 minutes. That was a long one. But we had a lot. We haven't done one for a while.
Yeah,
Karen Pischke, thanks for coming. We didn't introduce you as you came in.
Thanks, Joey. And thanks again for the recommendation that you said about the Gloucester Teas at the Gloucester Charter Connection.
Oh, are they available there now?
Well, I went over and talked to Captain Johnny and Julie, and they right away welcomed the t-shirt.
So
there,
your t-shirt line is available at the Chartered Connection, which is next to the Causeway Restaurant and across from Mile Marker.
And there's a new ice cream store going in next door.
Oh, that's cool. That's good for that neighborhood.
So it's under construction right now, and soon as that construction's done, they're going to have the t-shirts on the wall.
All right. GloucesterCast 225 is in the books. Thanks, guys.
Oh, that was a good one.
All right.